Hey, welcome to another week of Talk on Sport. I bit my tongue this morning.
Perfect way to get ready for a radio show.
Seriously. My name is Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And yeah, if you thought I was going to be serious about anything today, you were completely wrong. This is like my hour of levity a week, give or take.
For the hundredth week.
That is, what, 4 days that we have spent in this box.
Yes.
Well, and not counting the time that we like sit here and Google things and look things up in between, because as my wife says, this, you going to record a show, is never an hour.
No.
You know, and it's never an hour and a half.
The finished product is an hour.
But yeah, so.
Really, it takes a week to make a 1 hour show. I mean,
yes, it does.
To follow the sports world.
If we're truly being honest, it takes 46 years to make an hour show.
That is also true.
Every week. So, so I bit my tongue this morning. I was, for those who know me, you know that I have a very poorly adjusted, very anxious dog.
Yes.
You agreed so quickly. He is a lab whippet named Charlie. We have fed into all of his neuroses in the last 2.5 years. And one of his many neuroses is the fact that we have an electric fence at the house and he will not walk through the electric fence.
You call that a neurosis?
No. Even if I take his collar off, he won't walk through the electric fence because one day...
Would you?
I don't know. Well, when I finish this story, you'll understand precisely why he doesn't. So I would carry him across, which is fine for me as I'm slightly stronger than the others in my house. My wife had been working on training him to, okay, this is okay. If you're on the leash, it's okay. And one day I was in a hurry to take Libby to the bus and I forgot to take his collar off. And so I pick up I go to walk him through the line and he gets zapped, and immediately it's like, dude, if this guy's walking me through the line, I'm not having it.
Right.
I'm done with him. So Charlie now requires your visual is me. Usually what he does is he like jumps up like he's a person and I kind of carry him
like he's flying,
like I'm hugging him across, but I've been trying not to encourage the jumping behavior. So Charlie, I'll pick him up like he's flying and take him across, and then we go on our merry way. Well, this morning, he was excited. My kids were there. The neighbor kids were there, and I'm trying not to have him jump. I go and I bend down for Charlie, and Charlie jumps right back up into my chin. Snap back to reality. Whoa, there goes gravity. And, bit my tongue and was pretty salty about it. Rather than curse in front of the neighbor kids, I walked back in the house with my tail between my legs, and that was that. So
that sounds like delayed retaliation from Charlie.
If he was a cat.
For getting zapped.
If Charlie was a cat, I would believe it, but no, it's, yeah.
Just a freak event.
If he was a cat, I would think that it was thousands of years of lion DNA conspiring against me, like they say in that insurance commercial, but no. This is just my dog being my dog. So, it would have been a baseball injury commensurate with Jose Canseco missing games because of hat head, Goose Gossage throwing out his back, I believe taking his boots off. I think Lee Smith missed games from sneezing.
I mean, there have been dozens of major leaguers who've been injured in the shower or they've gotten sunburns from suntanning.
Right.
When you say Canseco with the hat head, wasn't that... Was that when the ball went off his head for the home run?
In Sports Illustrated, they referenced it at one point about Jose Canseco missing games because of hat head. And I don't know if that's hat head due to heading the ball over the fence. it's very much that's kind of indicative of the ridiculous baseball injuries that you read about.
Yes.
It's just the dumb stuff of, here you go. There we go. On Fox Sports, you get it. And you'll remember all these. Trevor Bauer is one. Do you remember this one? He was flying drones, and he cut his finger attempting to repair one.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Allen Hill, I think, has my favorite. Do you remember?
No.
It's like when I read all these, it brings back great memories. Former outfielder for, like, I think he was a Blue Jay, he was a Giant. He fell through a glass table after waking up from a dream that spiders were eating him. Can you imagine? Wow. Like, you're freaking out because spiders are all over you, and, like, you're in this really deep sleep, and you're trying to get spiders off you, and then you fall through a glass table.
Jeez.
Brian Giles, 1998, missed games because of spider bites. Vince Coleman, you all remember this. He got eaten by the tarp in the 85 LCS. Sammy Sosa strained his back sneezing in 2004, but it may also have been as a result of some steroid use. Moises Alou, famous for urinating on his hands and jumping up and down apoplectically after Steve Bartman touched the ball. Tore knee ligaments falling off a treadmill only to re-injure the knee riding a bike during rehab. do you remember Jason Isringhausen?
The pitcher, yes.
Closer, yeah. Stabbed himself in the leg trying to open the packaging of the club car lock. Do you remember the club?
Right.
Like the thing on your steering wheel. I'm very thankful we don't have those anymore. Later that year, he punched a trash can, broke his hand, and contracted tuberculosis. I don't know, all at the same time. Jeremy Offelt, the Giants reliever, cut his hand trying to separate frozen hamburger patties, resulting in nerve damage in his right hand that required surgery.
Good thing he was a lefty, wasn't he?
Yes. Then he hurt his right knee playing with his kids, only then to injure his left hand trying to avoid a foul ball hit his way. In 2015, he bruised his knee, resulting in a DL stint after slamming into a dock playing with his kids at a lake, which kind of calls to mind Jeff Kent, who claimed to have injured himself washing his truck, falling off his truck, and I don't remember how he actually injured himself.
That would be strange.
Yeah.
If you buy that one.
Milton Bradley, volatile former Mariner, tore his ACL when a manager separated him from an umpire during an argument.
Oh, that's right. He just crumpled to the ground out on the field.
Yep. Not everybody enjoys plane rides as much as Wade Boggs, who gasses dozens of beers on plane rides. Tom Glavine allegedly broke a rib vomiting after a bad in-flight meal. Yikes. Joel Zumaya missed the 2006, the former Tigers pitcher did, after injuring his wrist playing Guitar Hero. That is a very 2006 thing.
Yes.
I'm sad Guitar Hero is no longer. John Smoltz, this is a long list, didn't miss time, but the legend is that he burned himself ironing a shirt that he was wearing.
Oh, wow.
Smoltz says that a portable steamer spit boiling water on him, resulting in the burn. Ricky Henderson fell asleep with an ice pack in his foot, and so this is a lot like what AB did. He got frostbite. This one, Ron Gant, yeah, fractured his leg in a dirt bike accident in 1995. That was just kind of a bummer. I like Ron Gant. Carlos Perez broke his nose in a car accident trying to pass the Expos team bus. Did you ever get in a team bus accident?
No, but we had the team bus break down because of no AC.
Right, well,
that's par for the course.
That's minor league ball and more so indie ball. We were driving back from the gym one day, and the bus driver sideswiped a car on the way back from the gym and didn't stop.
Wow.
And there was somebody there, like, outside the car shaking their fist. And we're all on the bus going. This guy's name was LL. His name was Lonnie. But he asked that everybody call him LL. And he would.
You have to have that accent when you say L?
He's from, I believe he's from Roanoke, Virginia. But we would get on the bus, and he would refer to all of us as well as the players as fellers. So you'd see him and he'd say fellers. And I don't know why, we had a trainer named Katsu Matsumoto. This was the Giants single A. And he would refer to us as fellers. And Katsu was just Katsu. It was Katsu was Katsu's name. He would look at us and go, fellers, Katsu. I have no idea. Why was Katsu not a feller? I don't know. Kevin Mitchell chipped a tooth on a microwave donut.
Yikes.
I mean, you think about an unbreakable guy who caught a ball with a bare hand. Fly ball with a bare hand down the line, Kevin Mitchell. Adam Eaton in the World Series right now.
Hitting bombs, crushing,
playing real well. Stabbed himself in the stomach trying to open a DVD with a knife. There you go. Here's Jeff Kent. Broke a bone in his wrist in 2002 washing his truck. Turns out he was doing tricks on his motorcycle.
There you go.
Oh, and this is like kismet. Wade Boggs, the man was impervious to legendary drinking binges, but in 1986, he bruised his ribs trying to put on his shoes. Marty Cordova, this is the one you were alluding to earlier. Wasn't Marty Cordova traded for David Ortiz?
I don't recall.
fell asleep in a tanning bed in 2002, was told by doctors to stay out of the sun mid-season. The next game was a day game. That's a good one. Jamie Easterly, 1980s, ran backwards into a gopher hole and hurt his back. Remember the knuckleballer Steve Sparks?
Uh-huh.
Dislocated his shoulder trying to tear a phone book in half. He had seen motivational speakers do it. Brandon Inge, the catcher turned outfielder turned third base, utility guy for the Tigers, strained his oblique, supposedly fluffing his daughter's pillow.
Wow, that is quite a fluff.
The ambidextrous pitcher, Greg Harris, missed two starts after developing elbow inflammation for flipping sunflower seeds at his teammates. Oh, Jabba, former Nebraska Cornhusker, Jabba Chamberlain, dislocated his ankle on a trampoline in 2012. Mr. Pine Tar himself, George Brett, broke his toe in an effort to get closer to the TV while watching a game in that same year, 1983. Ryan Klesko strained a muscle in his back picking up his lunch tray. Cal Ripken, you don't think of him as ridiculous injuries because you don't think of him being injured.
No, he doesn't
get
injured.
Played with a broken nose after Roberto Hernandez fell and hit him in the face at the All-Star game. Odubee McDowell cut his hand trying to butter a roll. You keep going. Vince Coleman hit Dwight Gooden in the face with a golf club. Like, I'm still looking for somewhere along the line that we're going to have a... Oh, boy. They were going to stop after this one because it doesn't get any worse. Ken Griffey Jr. missed time after his protective cup pinched somewhere.
Oh.
Very painful. Yeah. So, anyway, that's...
There's quite a range there,
right,
of activities that seem harmless.
I should add myself to this. Bit his tongue.
Like, you can't really blame the guy for backing up and stepping into the gopher hole. He probably hadn't seen it, but
no.
If you're riding dirt bikes and jumping on trampolines, you know, those are ones where you can't feel too bad for the injured player.
No. It's any, I don't know. It just, it seems to happen with baseball players that maybe it's that they have idle time, even though they don't because they're playing 162 games, but they're just the kings of weird stuff happening to them. And I want to see, okay, Marty Cordova was a twin right around the same time that David Ortiz was a twin, but no, they were not traded for each other. They were just teammates back then. So, yeah, but I guess as long as we're on the topic of World Series, or as long as we're on the topic of baseball, we may as well talk through the World Series. Two games in.
Because we're taping this Friday morning.
Friday morning. So if you're listening Sunday night, it could be over, theoretically.
Or almost over. Sunday night will air mid-game.
It has been... Well,
no, that'll be game five.
That'll be game five.
Right, so it could be over. Yep.
So it has been... game one was a very good game. Well played, well pitched. A lot of... It was... The term de rigueur is high-stress outs and high-stress innings. And that was kind of the theme watching Max Scherzer out there. But he battled. He got himself out of stuff. And really the difference in that was he got himself out of stuff and Gerrit Cole, oddly enough, didn't.
Was game one the Soto game?
Yes.
Wow. That was impressive. I love watching that swing where he just destroyed that ball to left center, that home run off the facade. What a swing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get any better than that.
We were talking about it at Maggie's baseball practice the next night. And, you know, you do the old drill talking about, all right, the tee, inside, outside, you're hitting the, trying to hit the ball where it's pitched. So if it's an inside pitch, you're getting out in front of the plate. If it's an outside pitch, you're hitting it away.
Letting it get deep.
Letting it get deeper on you because you can pick it up where it is, the spin, all that. And Soto, okay, first of all, he turned 25 today, or 21 today. So he's one that it feels like he's been around way longer than that. But you watch him, and he's this really interesting blend of I don't know how to say there's a guy who it's a weird gift. You know when you're watching him that he's giving max effort. You know it. And he shows it. But it doesn't look like he is. It's this weird, like, somehow he communicates to you that he deeply cares about this. And he is a heck of a ball player. But you watch him go after a fly ball, and he makes it look like the easiest thing in the world. Like, you watch him do that, and you go, why can't we all just cover that much ground in the outfield like this kid just turned 21? Like, he's just a beast.
Well, I wonder if some of that comes from his size and the way that he sets up in terms of hitting with his stance, because he's got that real wide stance to begin with.
Yep.
He is a beast, like you said. He's a big, strong guy. And then it's just it is surprising that it looks so fluid. But, you know, you can't really muscle up and take that fastball away and hit it like he did.
No.
You have to be loose enough to let it fly.
Well, you have to be. It really is like a ballet of, I see the pitch out of the pitcher's hands. Cole's throwing, I don't know what the velocity was on that one. I'm going to assume it was high 90s because it was a fastball. And he throws a pitch away to Soto, and Soto lets it get deep. And I don't even know how to say it. Basically, just he flips it out of the park. And that would have been out of just about anywhere. Like, there are certainly...
I mean, he might have hit it through the Green Monster.
Right.
If it wasn't high enough.
Right. There.
But I think it probably was.
Is that still Minute Maid Park, Enron?
Who knows? It's Houston.
It's Houston. There are certainly, like, we're watching games and home run by X went 356 feet. Yeah, it would have not even gotten to the warning track at Dodger Stadium. Like, so there is certainly a park effect there, but the balls that he has hit and the discipline that he shows, like, he is wise beyond his years on the baseball field, and he's truly a joy to watch. And the other one, we've talked about him, is Jose Altuve. And I had never gone through and looked up his story, but Soto is a guy who went to a baseball eval camp in the Dominican, and the Nationals worked him out, and other teams saw it, and the Nationals basically scared everybody away. We got him. We're going to sign him, whatever. They signed him for $1.5 million out of the Dominican. Altuve goes to a camp in Venezuela, and they look at him, and they go, you're too little, and you're not old enough to be here. You have to prove your age to us. And he came back the next day, and they signed him, but they signed him for $15,000.
Wow.
So what, 1/100th of what Soto got. And, you know, both are extremely gifted players, both offensively and defensively, both given the existing career trajectory, I'd say both of them are on a path to get into the Hall of Fame in different ways. And Steph Curry might not be, but that's another story. But you look at a guy like Soto, who could have easily said, I got $1.5 million in the bank, I'm set, and continue to work. You look at a guy like Altuve, who could have gone, maybe they're right about me, maybe I'm too small, I'm just going to stay home. And he didn't. And now you have those two, who obviously the passion that they bring to the game and the excitement and the love and the joy and great teammates, like, that's only good for the game of baseball as it continues to hopefully grow and not get dragged into the muck by a work stoppage.
Yeah, I like watching both of those guys. And one other thing about Soto, I really enjoyed his interview on the field after the game. And it was Ken Rosenthal who took the risk, so to speak, of asking a question that oftentimes players will just give a canned answer. The question was, you know, were you nervous in your first game? You know, you expect most players to say, oh, you know, I just tried to treat it like a normal game, normal at bat. But Soto was honest and he said, yeah, I was nervous my first at bat.
Yeah.
And then after that, he had to tell himself, all right, pretend that it's just a normal game. And then he came back out and started mashing. So it was fun to hear that honesty from him on the field, talking about how much it meant to him, how nervous he was. And that helped show what you're talking about earlier in terms of his passion for the game. It was right there on display.
He's a sharp dude. And you look at, he's a guy who was signed 4 years ago. And somebody asked him how his command of the English language is where it is. And he said, I don't know if you heard this part, somebody would speak and he'd hear a phrase that he didn't know. And he would go back, he'd either ask or go back and look it up. And then he would use it later that day. And so he was picking things up as he, like, I think there are just some people who just, like, make it materialize. I don't know how else to put it, that he's just one of those guys who I really think if he had decided he wanted to be a physicist, he would have been a physicist. Like, just, he's crazy. And the game of baseball is stronger to have guys like this. And I really, we'll take a break and come back with Coach Zach Matthews of the Bedford High Football Program. I hope, because now we're talking about work stoppages and we're talking about other off-the-field things that are taking place, and unless you've been living in a cave, you've heard about all that stuff. Baseball needs to try to find a way to not be its own worst enemy. Let's just say that. Like, if you can keep the focus on what's happening in the game and truly market these players, and Rob Manfred, no, Mike Trout doesn't have to market himself. If you can keep the focus on these players and help them become household names, because that is your job as the league, baseball will be stronger. If you screw up and allow a work stoppage to happen and start contracting minor leagues, then you're going to be in a world of hurt. So take a break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, we are joined again this week by Bedford High football coach Zach Matthews, who is joining us after a rough one this past week. But, of course, after coming off that loss, you want to get right back on the horse as quickly as you can. Coach, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Excited to get back out there, that's for sure.
Well, Coach, one of the big stories from last week's game against Salem was Bedford going for it on fourth down, deep in Salem territory on three different occasions and not converting. How will the team learn from those plays and hopefully be ready to convert next time?
Well, I mean, I think that those three occasions of us going from the fourth down are really different scenarios. I mean, I think the first one was fourth and one on the 1 yard line. And when you talk about being fourth and one on the 1 yard line, first drive of the game, that was one I felt like on the road we needed to go for that and really try to start that game off on the right note. And obviously that one was unfortunate, and you get stuff, come up inches short of the goal line. That's a tough pill to swallow. You know, the other ones, when you talk about the other ones, in their territory, it's a situation where we're down in that game by a couple scores. And at that point in time, I just didn't think field goals were going to cut it as far as getting back in the game. So, I think our kids understand, when you get down in a game of that magnitude, field goals aren't going to win games against teams like Salem and some of the better teams in the state. So there's no doubt that we definitely need to score touchdowns and do a better job in those situations. And that's been a primary focus of ours this week.
Yeah, well, they all made sense to me, like you said. And that third one, I think, is when fourth and long, Scaling caught the ball, but he was just outside the back of the end zone. So it was almost a touchdown.
And the piece that's tough about that one is that, we scored two plays before that and it gets called back on a holding penalty. So,
right.
I mean, and that's part of, that's part of coaching and understanding team sports. But, on that fourth down, we had actually put the ball in the end zone, but it comes back due to a hold. And when you're in the red zone and mistakes are magnified. And so now all of a sudden you're first in goal. I think we started first in the goal from the first in goal from the four, and you get a holding call. And now you end up being in a long distance situation where, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to run the ball in that situation or to go for the field goal. You got to put it in the end zone. And he was certainly close to making the play, but those are the mistakes that obviously really hurt you in games like that.
Now, what about the player's mindset? Is it important to your coaching staff to have your players develop a mindset of wanting to go for it on fourth down and being aggressive and being confident that you'll convert?
I think one of the things for us right now is our mindset in general, having a confident mindset in general. I think the past 2 weeks we've been a little tentative. I think we've been caught on our heels. And there's no doubt Londonderry and Salem are very good football programs. They have very good teams this year. But I think we've been a little tentative and not so much confident in our responsibilities and what we're supposed to do. So I think that's something in general that we're looking for our players to develop. And I think a lot of that comes with experience and being in those situations. I'm hoping that we learn from those situations, being kind of up against it and in some of those scenarios against some of the best teams in the state, I think is only going to make our kids better in the long run if they learn from it.
Now, one of the things that I would guess that the team has a lot of confidence in is your passing attack. And last week, your offense gained more yardage through the air than on the ground. And you had three different receivers with at least three catches, which I think is a little bit rare in New Hampshire high school football. You had Sanchez have three catches for 33, Scaling had four catches for 55, and Green caught five for 72. So how valuable would this versatility be in the passing game for you down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, offensive coaches always talk about balance, and I don't think balance is necessarily having the same amount of runs as you do passes or the same amount of yardage, but it balance really for us is, being able to do whatever we need to do to win the football game. And so when you get up against teams like Salem and they have you know, seven guys in the box and they're crowding the line of scrimmage, they're really giving you the passing game. They're saying, we're not going to let you run the ball. We're going to make you make some plays in the passing game. And that's what I ask our kids to do. You know, if somebody's giving us the passing game, we need to be able to exploit some of the things they're giving us and take advantage of that. So I think we strive to be balanced. I think we want our kids to have confidence in the run game and in the pass game. And really, it ends up, you know, coming down to what the defenders choose to do on the field and how they want to play us. And if they take one away, we need to be able to do the other to try to find, you know, our path to victory.
Joined by Coach Zach Matthews, the head coach of the Bedford High football program. And, Coach, this week you're playing on a Friday. Last weekend you played on a Saturday. So simple math says you've had one fewer day in between games this week to prepare for the next game. What is a typical week of practice like for the team? And does it really matter much to you that this is, for all intents and purposes, a short week?
No, I mean, I don't think it matters to us. We're used to playing on Friday night. So our practice schedules, if you look at how we kind of break things down, most of the time our practice schedules break down, you know, for that Friday night game. So typically for us, you know, Mondays, that's when our JVs play a lot of games. So Mondays are putting in our game plan and reviewing film and things like that. Tuesday's an offensive day, and typically Wednesdays are primarily a defensive day. And then Thursday's the day where you kind of work on all your special teams and you work on offense, defense, and kind of sweep the corners and make sure things are all set. So in all honesty, I think our kids are used to the schedule we had this week. The thing that gets a little different is when you do play those Saturday games, you know, some of those Saturday games, you actually have an extra day of practice or an extra day of prep, and it gives you some time to work on some other things. So, you know, I would say I don't think it's any different. I actually think that our kids are more comfortable with the Friday night game and the Friday night practice schedule than they are the Saturday afternoon schedule. And so, you know, for us, it was a pretty typical week of preparation as far as the schedule is concerned.
And just so our listeners can get a sense of what the practices are actually like, what are the limitations or the practices that you use in terms of practicing in pads, hitting or not hitting in a typical week?
Yeah, so typically we try to, I mean, Wednesday is our physical day when we work on tackling, and that coincides with defense. And so especially with, you know, having really within our whole football program, we've got three different levels. So we've got freshmen, JV, and varsity, all of which play games on different days. And so the thing we try to do with our kids is really put them in a position, obviously, where safety comes first. And, you know, it's not like the old school days where people were hitting each other and tackling every single day, because we just don't believe in that as far as safety for our kids. And so what we really try to do is tier things. And so because our JVs play on Monday, Tuesday is usually kind of a day in uppers where we're just helmets and shoulder pads. We're working on offense. There's really not a ton of physical contact. We're really working more on technique. Wednesday's really the only day where we have periods of full contact, and that's really just to work on primarily blocking and tackling, and you really can't simulate that without full pads on, but it's a small amount of practice time. And then Thursday, again, we start tapering back to physicality again, and that's the day our freshmen play. So they aren't there, and we're working primarily with our JV and varsity guys. It's less physical, it's more mental, making sure everybody knows their assignments going into a Friday night game.
Well, that's fun to hear about just how everything's broken down, offense, defense, special teams, as you build up for each game. So how about tonight's game? You're facing off against a Timberlane group that has yet to win this season, but they had a close loss last week, 17-14 against Windham. What are you hoping for in terms of a focus, and what will you be looking at as the keys to performance for your guys tonight?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking to our kids all year long about, you know, we need to concern ourselves with what we're doing. And that's not to take anything away from any of our opponents, but we believe if we're able to, you know, do what we're supposed to do, we're able to manage kind of our mistakes and execute at a high level, that we're going to be in a great situation no matter who we play. And so, you know, I think that you look at the past 2 weeks, we played some very good football programs. And that being said, I think that we've made a lot of mistakes. And when you make mistakes against really good football programs, those mistakes end up being magnified on the scoreboard. And, you know, in specific situations, you mentioned the fourth downs, you know, red zone, things like that. So really, I want our kids to be focused on playing mistake-free football and just execute. You know, I think that when you talk about a Timberlane team, they're playing a lot of young kids. You know, I look at films from the beginning of the year, and then I look at film from where they're at right now, and there's no doubt they're getting better every single week, and their kids are giving them great effort. So for us, you know, like I said, we're going to game plan like we do for any other opponent, but really trying to get back on track as far as we're concerned is let's focus on us, let's focus on our execution and doing what we're capable of doing. And If we take care of those little things and our execution and effort is at a high level, I think the wins take care of themselves. And so kind of respecting the process a little bit and not thinking so much about the end result. And I think when you think about the end result, you lose focus of the process. And so we're trying to focus on the process week in and week out in practice and the process of winning each and every single play during a game.
Well, Coach, as always, we appreciate the time. Look forward to the game tonight, or I guess the second half of the game for anybody who's listening to us online, or as we are at halftime of the game playing this.
That's right. Confusing myself.
I'm like a dog chasing my own tail. But we have a game and a half left, and then it's playoffs. So thank you for taking the time, as always.
Yep, thanks for having me on. Hopefully, everybody's good second half.
You got it. Thanks, Coach. That was Coach Zach Matthews, the head coach of the Bedford High football program. And we will take a quick break. Come right back. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
And the World Series is still going on. And for those of us who are like diehard baseball fans, I may have 2 to 5 games left in the season. That feels like it was starting.
You don't have more than 5 left.
I know.
It's 2 to 5.
I may have as few as 2, which is somewhat disheartening. You know, I guess while I would really like to have the Washington Nationals win it, because it's been very infrequent that in the world of baseball, I actually get what I want because I've been a Dodgers fan. And I mean, this is going on 30 years. So I rarely get the team that I want that wins the whole thing. It would be nice to see them do it. I just don't want a 4-game sweep.
So you want the Nationals to take their time. That's what it comes down to.
Kind of, sort of. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind them to win it in 6, but I don't know. I don't know.
Well, the thing that I've been thinking about since Tuesday, game one, is this schedule. And
since nothing else, you haven't thought about anything else?
That's about it, really.
All right, that's good.
I'm perplexed because, you know, before we had the interview with Coach Matthews, you were talking about baseball and marketing and the old Mike Trout situation. You know, he needs to market himself. Well, baseball, again, needs to work on marketing itself better. And the scheduling is huge. We've talked many times on the show about World Series games. What time do they start? But I'm thinking about what night do they start? And the problem I have is that game one of the World Series this year was also opening night of the NBA.
Yes.
And that is not ideal marketing and planning in my mind.
Well, it's like you have all of these things that are all stacked up on 1 or 2 days. And I don't know, like the NFL owns Sunday. Like, we have acknowledged that. That's fine. Monday is Monday Night Football, so you start Tuesday, Wednesday, then Thursday, and I don't know how football became a Thursday thing also. I think it's kind of ridiculous.
As do many of the players, but...
Yeah, so you have Thursday night, so this weird short week and whatnot, and then baseball comes back Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, we've talked... I don't know that there's a perfect solution. Like, there are some people who would go, this is great. It's like an all-you-can-eat sports buffet. And then there are some people who say, this is your biggest stage. Why is this just not pushed back slightly? Or why does the NFL not start on Thursday? Or NBA, excuse me.
Right. So I think that's the challenge they're going to face moving forward, because on the NBA side, they're trying to expand their calendar, get that week-long break for the All-Star break, and have fewer back-to-backs. So they're making their schedule a little bit longer so that the players have more rest during the season. So baseball needs to think about, okay, how do we adjust now? And maybe this is the impetus MLB needs to shorten this season by a week. You know, there's been talk about making it 155 games or less instead of 162. So maybe this is the time when baseball says, all right, let's move it back a week. Let's shorten the end of the season by a week. So you have 7 less games, you play 155. And now we can get the World Series finished before the NBA starts.
Right. That would make good sense, which is precisely why they won't do it. But, I mean, you think, okay, I go back to the 88 Dodgers. You think about October 15th, that was game one of the World Series. The World Series was done, I believe, 7 or 8 days later. Like, it was a 5-game, done, out. Like, you shouldn't still be going into November. Like, there really is no benefit to that. Honestly,
and this year it started on the 22nd. So you're talking about exactly what I am. Start right. 1 week earlier.
Yeah.
It would have been the 15th.
There's no benefit to, and just the same way that there's no benefit to the NHL of going into June. There's no benefit to the NBA of going as deep as they go. Like, figure out another way. I get that we want to have playoffs include as many teams as we can because that increases the value of the regular season and makes it so that there is a trading deadline that has suspense associated with it, and you don't have half the teams eliminated by, you know, three quarters of the way through the season. There's a math problem in there for you. But I understand all of that sort of stuff. But by the time you get to the end of a season in June-ish for the NBA and the NHL, most fans are just kind of checked out. Like, if their team's not, and you see it up here, like, we talked about baseball for 22 minutes at the beginning of this thing. You and I are about as excited about baseball as anybody over the age of like 15 is. Because, you know, I go to practices and kids are talking to me about, sure, so this, did you see this? He throws the pitch and it comes out three different ways. Like, the kids are excited about it, but most adults who are casual baseball fans, like, no offense, New England. New England is the most fair weather place I've ever lived in terms of fandom, where once the team's out, it's like, I don't know what that white thing is with red stitches on it anymore. I've forgotten that that game even exists. Nobody wants to talk about it.
Is that really fair weather fandom, or is that passion for your team?
That's fair weather fandom. It's spoiled fans who have been so accustomed to, they're accustomed to winning. That's a good thing. But again, I go back to, I feel like I say this every 2 or 3 weeks. Someday the Patriots are going to be bad again. And someday people aren't going to care about the Patriots. And someday, like, well, you know, Sam Darnold's going to be there and the Jets are going to be beating the Patriots in Foxborough. And he's going to say,
the ghosts will have disappeared.
He's going to say, I see ghosts out there. It's all your fans that used to be there.
Oh.
Yeah.
He'll turn it around eventually?
I don't know. I hope so. I like him. Obviously, he's a USC guy. He's a San Clemente, Southern California guy. He deserves better.
Well, he brought that upon himself.
Well, okay, but yeah, to an extent, but somebody should have had enough sense not to air everything that gets said. They have a production truck for that. I'm going to be talking about that during the game tonight. Ghosts, like, well, swatting away spirits over my shoulder.
Yeah, you've heard about ratings before. Those are somewhat important to the networks.
I know, but putting the Patriots on is ratings anyway. And, well, and now, we weren't really planning on talking about the NFL, but this is really what happens. The Patriots have sort of built their empire so far this season on fluff. They are winning by eating marshmallow cream. Like, they are not playing the best and brightest. Like, they're playing, if this was college football, they are playing directional schools and, like, FCS teams and East Appalachian State Teachers College. They're not playing. They have not truly been tested yet.
But if eating is the analogy, they're eating
cupcakes.
They're eating with cupcakes. Perfect manners. Their plates are spotless.
Yeah.
Within about 5 minutes, they're just cleaning up the competition perfectly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we get some tests coming up here. We've got Cleveland. We've got Baltimore.
Hello, Cleveland.
And then some tougher matches. We've got Kansas City in week 14. So plenty of opportunities to find out just how good they are against better competition. But
yes,
it has still been a historic start.
It has been a very good start. However, I'm curious to see what happens with the level of competition. This has really been, for all intents and purposes, like an 8-game exhibition season against the worst the NFL has
Harry,
to offer.
Harry, are you listening to this?
Well,
because that included a trip through Buffalo.
I understand. I'm just, you know, I think the Bills are still all right, provided Josh Allen can get his act together again. But all I'm saying is I don't feel like it has been the most strenuous test for the Patriots thus far this season.
No, it'll get tougher.
I guarantee, just as long as I'm not Doug Peterson guaranteeing anything.
Yeah, right. That didn't go so well down in Dallas.
Well, that's another thing, too, where, like, all of a sudden everybody seizes upon the fact that he guaranteed something. Well, he should have faith in his team. They're his team. And, yeah, it didn't go as well, but it is what it is. So you're, like, ruffling through papers over there like you're thinking about serious things. So, all right, we were planning on talking about the NBA, and I alluded to this earlier. I guess if you're like old dog NBA guy, Steph Curry, not a Hall of Famer.
From
6-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year, 2-time MVP.
Including unanimous MVP.
Winning multiple three championships.
3 championships in 4 years.
Not a Hall of Famer.
Widely considered the greatest shooter on the planet ever.
MJ says not a Hall of Famer.
Oh, he's not a Hall of Famer.
Nope.
No.
Not yet.
Well,
by what standards?
Yeah.
By what standards?
Is the only standard that he technically isn't yet because he hasn't been voted in, he hasn't retired. If that was his point, then yeah, of course. But he doesn't need to do anything else. He doesn't need to make another shot to be enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Is Michael Jordan still making player personnel decisions?
Well, I think, unfortunately, he may have given those duties to Mr. Kupchak, who let the point guard of the Celtics go for nothing because he didn't like what was offered in the trade. So instead, he just took nothing.
And I missed that. Fill in details for those of us who are not watching the NBA waiver wire as fastidiously as you are.
Well, the Celtics and Hornets traded point guards in the offseason.
Yeah.
Terry Rozier went down to Charlotte.
Okay.
They signed him as a free agent. And Kemba Walker has moved to Boston. And apparently Boston offered to trade Charlotte some sort of asset to, you know, help with the salary cap and shuffle things around. And Charlotte just turned him down. So, you know, you look at what the Pelicans got for Anthony Davis. They got a boatload for trading their star. And instead, Charlotte takes its, you know, you could say homegrown superstar because he'd been there his whole career. And they didn't quite want to give him a max contract. So they just let him go for free.
Yeah.
And now Charlotte's looking like it will be one of the 5 worst teams in the league this year. And yeah, Jordan's in charge, but he, you know, things have really been going downhill there. They've got bad contracts like Batum, and now they're just a bunch of young guys with some potential, and they're hoping to have these guys develop, but they have no hopes on the horizon of being anything close to a playoff team.
So I guess my point with that is Michael Jordan was a great player and arguably the best of all time, if not one of 5 that fits in your hand. Okay, maybe not the best executive or judge of talent. And, well, I think the other thing that enters in with the old guys in the NBA is the, and I say old guys, he's not old by any stretch, but there's a lot of, he never would have made it in the league when we were in the league.
Right.
There's a lot of that going around.
I think he would have found a way.
It's funny, though. I think about I feel like every sports organization anywhere, guys always do the same stuff. We talked about Goose Gossage hurting his back with his boots earlier. Goose Gossage was one notably complaining about the players of today. In my day, we would never have allowed this to happen. We would have brushed him back and hit him in the head if he flipped his bat. Okay, great. Sure. Just like you did to Ron Say in the 81 series. I hear it from umpires when I'm coaching the bases. Oh, years ago, you should have seen the games that were going on here years ago. Oh, the kids were. I'm like, if anything, the kids are bigger now.
Right.
The bats are better now. Like, you know, we have this uncanny ability, we all do, to imagine that the past has now crystallized into this mythical place. And it wasn't necessarily that way. Michael Jordan was a fabulous player with unquestionable talent. But, you know, I guess there are a couple things. First of all, like your mom always said, I'm sure my mom said the same thing. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Right.
Like, you don't need to throw that comment in about Steph Curry being a Hall of Famer, not being a Hall of Famer, whatever. It's neither here nor there. The other, it's like, in this day and age, we all feel like we have to open our, and we're guilty, we're sitting here behind microphones doing a radio show. We all feel like we have to open our mouths and inveigh upon everything that is happening. And we really don't. Like, there are sometimes, going back to LeBron James talking about China, there's sometimes that it's okay to not have a thought and wax poetic in front of the microphones. There are sometimes, guys, I just can't touch that. Like,
yeah, well, it's like the front office down in Houston with the Astros. They didn't really follow that directive either.
Yes.
But you're right about Jordan. I mean, Yeah, he certainly has not had a very strong run as an executive. And you compare it to the other big story of the NBA so far, the Clippers. And think about, you know, so you talk about Jordan talking negatively about a star elsewhere in the league. The flip side is what the Clippers did when Doc Rivers went on ESPN, when Kawhi Leonard was still a Toronto Raptor, and talked about how much he loved Kawhi and basically tampered on national television on purpose to send the message to how much they wanted Kawhi. Sure enough, they get him and they pay some, you know, slap on the wrist fine for it. It was the best investment Ballmer and Doc Rivers have ever made. It was certainly planned.
Yeah.
And look what they got. Now they have a title contender. The Clippers look excellent. They took down the Lakers on opening night. They just went into Golden State and routed Steph Curry and the crew. So, you know, look at what happens from the top down when you have a positive strategy like that.
Well, and that was Magic's point was, well, MJ is just saying what he's got to say because otherwise it could be tampering. That was actually a really, really good point and taken well. I think there are other ways that you can say it. But, okay, we're going to run through some names here. Would you rather have Steph Curry or Mitch Richmond?
On my team?
Yep.
Steph Curry.
Steph Curry or Tracy McGrady?
Steph Curry.
Steph Curry or Gary Payton?
Steph Curry.
Steph Curry or Ralph Sampson?
I guess it depends on what kind of team you're trying to build.
Yep. Steph Curry or Artis Gilmore, Dennis Rodman. I'm going over.
You're naming Hall of Famers.
I'm naming Hall of Famers from the last 10 years that have been inducted. Dennis Johnson, rest in peace.
You're going to have to go to a very, very short list and not those middling Hall of Famers. You're going to have to go to the top of Mount Rushmore to get a debate.
That's my point. I mean, you start getting into guys when you're talking through this where it's like Karl Malone. I can make a case why I might want Steph Curry, and I could also make a case that Karl Malone doesn't have any rings.
Yeah.
Sorry. You know, and I could make a case era-wise. Would Karl Malone have been a great player in this era? Undoubtedly. However, you know, and that's the fun of arguing among time eras. That's the word that I was looking for. It's the fun of arguing among eras is sometimes you can look and go, yeah, this guy would have fit. Sometimes you look and go, I don't know that his skills would have really translated here.
I mean, it's hard to quantify without looking at the names exactly where I would put Steph on the list, but probably without really breaking it down, definitely top 20. So, you know, maybe top 15, and we'll see how things keep going. But, yeah, until you get to guys like Jordan, LeBron, Bird, and, you know,
Magic, MJ.
You know, maybe Magic, maybe Kareem. Those are the guys where you say, okay, yeah, I'd take him over Steph. But the list is not much longer than that.
It's a really short list. And it's, for Jordan's point, it's rarefied air.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, anyway, not bitter or anything about that. Looking at, I just appreciate fine things for what they are.
Yes.
That's all.
We celebrate Steph Curry on
the
show.
That's all. Appreciate fine things. All right. Looking around the town of Bedford, I guess, before we get too far down the road, we want to remind those who are interested in playing basketball, not this guy, you, but not me. Open gyms are taking place Tuesdays and Thursdays at Lurgio from 8 to 9:30, Bedford High from 8:30 to 9:30. And the registration deadline for the Hoops League is 10 days from today, which will be 8 days from Sunday. Not eight
ways
to Sunday.
In other words, the draft is on Tuesday, November 5th.
There you go.
So you got to sign up in advance of that.
And you get 24 games throughout the winter, 24 regular season games, and then double elimination playoffs. So you talk about a season that really runs too long, the BMBL season. Boom.
Got it.
It is on par with the NBA as far as the length of the season goes. But it is a lot of fun. It's a great way to stay in shape during the winter months. So you can find more at BMBL.net, the Bedford Men's Basketball League. You have to be over 30 to get in on all the fun of the BMBL. You took in some soccer. So the boys closed their regular season 15-0-1. The only blemish on that record, a tie to Wyndham, which is not a bad team in their own rights. They were 10-3-2. But they're heading into the playoffs. Figure they're probably the one.
They are the one. So they'll have a bye. They, as you mentioned, have not lost. They've been excellent offensively and defensively. We had that last broadcast on Tuesday, a 4-1 win over Memorial. This week was senior week in soccer. So we did the boys' game on Tuesday, girls' game on Thursday, and it was kind of fun. The athletic department painted the numbers
I saw that.
Of each senior on the turf
yep.
for each game. So they changed it between Tuesday and Thursday. If you want to watch those games, as we've mentioned before, you go on the Bedford, the BCTV YouTube page, and you can find those broadcasts. So, yeah, fun for the seniors on the boys' side to finish off a season without any defeats going into the playoffs as the number one seed. Same thing for the girls, another strong finish. They won 4-2 Thursday night. That's last night. They're going to be the four seed. They will not have a bye. The boys open the playoffs next Wednesday, the 30th. Girls open on Halloween. Those will both be home games, so go out and watch those. We're going to broadcast the boys' game on Wednesday if you can't make it out. Fun moment for the girls on senior night. Mackenzie McEachern, who's still in a walking boot, started the game on the field. She actually kicked off for Bedford. She played it back. Bedford kicked it out of bounds. And then the team all surrounded her, embraced her as she subbed out. And so she got a chance to be back on the field in Bedford yep. for the last time with her fellow seniors.
And a very classy move by Coach Michelle Winning, allowing that to happen. Also by the opponents, and I'm sure they knew about it and were privy to what was going on. But you look at that Bedford team, 13-3, they've won their last three. The real difficulty is you play the what-if game and you say, what if they're playing that season with McKenzie? How is the season different? You have to believe it is a different season. Looking on the girls' side, Exeter, which kind of is par for the course, it's usually Bedford, Exeter, or Central that are among those top three. This year, Londonderry was up there in the rarefied air. Exeter beat them 3-1. So, but there are some teams that are clustered close to Bedford. Nashua South is one that beat the Bulldogs, and Central's one also that beat the Bulldogs. So Bedford can certainly get there. They're just going to have their work cut out for them to get through some of those teams because there's no shortage of talent at the top of that bracket.
Yeah, and I think Bedford has slowly adjusted to the absence of McEachern. And I thought last night, you know, it was an interesting game because Bedford had a ton of chances in the first half but didn't score. But then they scored four in a short span of time in the second half. And there was a lot of nice interplay between DeAngelis, Ellie Flynn, and Olivia Tulin. The three of those up front were really creating a lot of excellent opportunities for each other. And they played, they had enough chances where they could have scored seven or eight, but it was just one of those nights. So I think they're finally starting to gel. And then one other fun fact about the broadcast yesterday, we had some fun because Frank Slajewski was on there.
Oh, good.
And, you know, his daughter Rachel is graduating. So he had, the girls had given him fun facts about all the seniors. So he worked those into the broadcast.
The best man.
But then what we had fun with in the booth was that, because his daughter Rachel was out there, Slajewski was on the field, and Dover had a player named Kozlowski.
Uh-oh.
And at one point, they were marked up against each other. So we were joking about Slajewski and Kozlowski battling on the field while I was in between the two of them in the booth.
Yeah, that's really funny. That's it's perfect. You had to break up the fight in there. The other fun footnote about the Bulldogs last night, too, was you have the freshman goalie, Zoe Santos, and her sister, Jory. Those two got to be out on the field together. And very sweet family, great people. And as a parent, you look at that stuff and you go, yeah, that's the kind of thing that sort of a dream scenario. You don't figure that your kid is going to be playing varsity as a freshman. And for them to be out there and experience that together is really a wonderful time. And congratulations to the Santos family for being able to have that experience as well.
Yeah, Coach Winning started 10 seniors in the game, including Kate Hernack in net. So in the first half, the Santos sisters were not playing together. And by the way, Kate Hernack made an incredible save in the first half. And then Zoe Santos played in the second half. And so Santos and Santos played on the field together some in the second half.
That's cool. Yeah, and they've seen plenty of time on the field together this year as well. So also, I guess a lot of tears shed at the high school this week. Senior night at Bedford Volleyball as well. They wound up 10-7. They finished ninth in the standings. They'll head into playoffs. And field hockey also lost their last two. They'll finish 5-8-1. I think they're the 12 seed going into the playoffs. I don't know. Hard to tell. Some of the updates that I get are not always the most accurate. Soccer, I mean, you're getting it straight from the horse's mouth because you're there.
Right.
But
that makes it easier.
Yeah, it makes it way easier. But some of this stuff, we have to hit the Google machine for it and see what we can figure out. But
the other one we have to give an update on is golf.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
We had to Google that one because we didn't make it to the second day of competition, the Sunday.
You should get
outing.
Some like super fan merit badge for your adult Boy Scout thing.
Yeah, the individual golfers from Bedford teed it up this past Sunday, and they completed their 2-round individual championship event, and we had 3 Bedford Bulldogs finish in the top 10. CJ Ledoux finished 7th, Brady Burke was 2 shots behind in 8th, and John Giroux was a few shots back in 10th. So
nice
congratulations
job.
To those 3 Bulldogs.
Great work on that for those guys. Obviously, CJ Ledoux is one who has had a very storied career for the Bulldogs out there on the links, and he is one that will be missed as they try for their 7th state championship in a row. It's kind of preposterous when you think about the numbers that accompany that, but it's a lot of good golf being played out at the high school.
Yes, sir.
So, but I can't believe that the fall sports season is about to over. Maybe I can, trying to speed everything up. Can't believe the fall sports season is about over, and we're now at a point that getting emails about winter sports and tryouts and that sort of stuff, like, things are on the fast track, and yeah, it just, time flies, man.
It's sort of like the 100 shows.
It is the 100 shows.
By the way, I cannot claim 100.
That feels like it has been completely glacial. It feels like it's like dog years, and I've done like 700 shows.
You did the first 5 or 6 without me, so you're at 100. I'm just down in the mid 90s somewhere.
It's a lot of
talking.
But
congratulations to you.
Thank you. Congratulations. I'm sorry to everybody for subjecting you to 100 shows. We'll see how many more I can stomach before I ultimately get sick of myself. So we're going to rebrand. I don't know what we're rebranding as. I'm slacking on that too. Right now, I feel like I need to ice my tongue getting back to the first segment. I'm like, dude, I can barely talk anymore. So that being said, have a great sports week. Thanks to everybody here at Bedford 105.1 for all their hard work. George Cox, for he's doing a great job on the video side. We miss Chris, but George is really crushing it. Harry Kozlowski, Bill Jennings, and Colleen Richardson, thanks for the opportunity. My co-host, Andrew Hansen, and our guest this week, Zach Matthews, the Bedford High football coach. Again, have a great sports week. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.